Welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, where we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. And now, here are your hosts, Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dana Day.
And I am Dr. Susan Schmidt. Welcome to ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, and we're hosted by Arizona Balance and Hearing. And this is where we discuss all the latest and all of the greatest advances in testing and treatment of all hearing and balance issues.
Education is at the heart of our core values at ABHA, one that Dr. Schmidt and I take very seriously, the education of both ourselves and mostly our patients. And that is why we're here today.
And to that end, if anyone who is listening has any specific questions you would like answered on this podcast, please go to questions@arizonabalance.com. So that's questions@arizonabalance.com. Arizona is spelled out. And we'll be sure to answer them in one of our upcoming podcasts. And also, as with every podcast, don't forget to click subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes.
So it's great to be back here with Susan and Robin and doing this new episode. So welcome, everyone, and welcome, Susan and Robin, today. For those not living in the Phoenix area, you missed our very own Dr. Susan Schmidt being interviewed as on the relationship between the COVID vaccine and the onset of tinnitus recently on one of the newscasts. While the segment was informative and wonderful, they really didn't use a lot of your questions and answers, they didn't really focus on the relationship between COVID and tinnitus, or I should say the COVID vaccine and tinnitus, mm-hmm. as much as I would have liked. You did a great job, first of all, just tell me about the interview and your thoughts after you saw it air.
As they predicted, this is my first time doing a news interview, right? So right. They come in they were there for about, I'm going to say, an hour and a half, and they said, we're going to cut this down to 45 seconds. I'm like, okay. So I was wondering what they would pull out of that. It turned out to be less than 45 seconds because they did interview some people who had the vaccine and actually acquired tinnitus shortly after, and other medical professionals as well. It was an interesting experience. But I think they missed, some important data, but I don't know if we can really track it. So they gave statistics as to how prevalent it is to acquire tinnitus as a result of the vaccine. But in reality, it's really hard to link the vaccine to the tinnitus. It's hard to usually link tinnitus to a specific event. So most of the time we don't know what the cause of tinnitus is. And so to compare it to, I just had the vaccine and now I have tinnitus, is it really the vaccine that caused the tinnitus? That's what we're unclear about. So they gave statistics there, but, did the vaccine actually cause the tinnitus indirectly or directly? Or is it just this person would have acquired tinnitus at that time as well? So that kind of gets where it's getting a little muddy, not so clear.
Yeah. So hard thing to answer at this point.
It is.
Yeah. So in previous episodes, we've discussed what is new in the diagnosis of balance disorders. And today I am so excited to have my friend and colleague, Dr. Bridget Wallace, to discuss some of the newest treatments for balance disorders. And just to give you a little knowledge or a little heads up on Dr. Wallace, she has been in love with the idea of working in the helping profession. So Bridget transitioned from working as an exercise specialist to a physical therapist. She graduated Texas State in 1995 and received her doctorate from Hardin Simmons in 2008. Within 1 year of being a physical therapist, she became involved in everything vestibular. In 1998, she received her competency-based certificate in vestibular rehab, and 21 years later, led the launch of vestibular competency-based course as clinical director of education for 360 NeuroHealth. Bridget is also a co-founder of 360 NeuroHealth and owner of 360 Balance and Dizziness in Austin, Texas. 360 NeuroHealth provides online and live courses for therapists, audiologists, athletic trainers, nurses, neuro-optometrists, and physicians. 360 Balance and Dizziness has been in operation since 2002 and has received multiple awards, including top clinics in Austin, for more than 10 years. Bridget has also been one of the recipients of the Healthcare Heroes Award by the Austin Business Journal. She has co-authored vestibular-related research articles, book chapters, patents, and software applications. She lectures globally on vestibular and concussion-related topics. And in addition to proclaiming her passion for everything vestibular, she shares a huge love for family, friends, and being outdoors. Welcome, Bridget.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you. So, Bridget, you and I have known each other for, gosh, 7-8 years now, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a while.
At least, yeah.
We both worked together kind of on an advisory board for concussion care here in Arizona. That's where I originally met you. You flew in from Texas, and we met at a roundtable, I believe.
Yes, it was turned into something wonderful and unexpected, and I'm certainly grateful for the continued relationships that developed from that.
Yes. So now, years later, we both are still in clinic, and we're still trying to find new and better ways to treat our balance patients. I know I am, and I certainly know you are. What would you say you have learned most over the last 10 years that has advanced the treatment of balance disorders?
You know, I mean, sometimes when I hear questions, I just hear so many questions and questions. So I think when I think about what I've learned most, it seems like instinctively, I think I've learned the most from patients, the most from the mistakes I've made, and just being able to collaborate with people from around the world. You know, it's interesting, you and I have been in this space for a while, and if I were to go back and look at a note that I wrote 25 years ago for a vestibular rehab treatment, I don't know how different it would be than today. We still use rocker boards and tilt boards and foam and walk with head movements and do VOR and ocular motor. I think what I've been appreciative in the last 10 years is more research that allows us to have more connecting, confirming conversations with our patients, particularly around 3PD or patients with either emotional trauma, physical trauma, and how that's affected this, what we call this sensory reweighting about balance, how we use vision, how we use our body, how we use our inner ear. And, you know, for so many people out there treating this patient population, they've known that grounding and deep breathing and meditation has been super helpful. But I think to be able to tie in the research that shows this over dependence on vision and a kind of a decreased ability to tap into our body for orientation. And so I think that, you know, that's allowed me to have really more clear and concise conversations with patients. And then maybe we don't start on an unstable surface. Maybe we start on a more stable surface so that they can really begin to improve the way they use their body for orientation. That's been the biggest thing, I think, for me personally.
Great. Since you mentioned the VOR exercises mm-hmm. when you were just talking, so that's your vestibular ocular reflex. So for everybody listening, when you move your head a certain way, you should have a reaction. Your eyes move in a certain way as well that complements your head movement. So that's what we're talking about. And so this has been used with therapists for a long time. And it's considered like maybe the gold standard of what we started to do a while back. And so are you finding that you're still doing those VOR exercises, or is there other things that you're doing now in addition to that?
You know, I am just so interested in the VOR. I have studied it for so many years. I'm fascinated by the VOR. I'm surprised that we still know so little about how it's actually recalibrated, or when we use the word adaptation. So, you know, we definitely still use VOR. When someone comes to therapy, we don't spend the session doing VOR, and we, you know, I've never spent much time on long durations of VOR activities. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we can teach people to do that at home. And then while they come in for a visit, we can do more hands-on. You know, I think VOR, we still need more research. It's traditionally taught that you do VOR at a certain velocity and, you know, in these kind of back and forth movements, but yet the literature is showing that maybe doing it to one side may be more optimal. The literature is showing, instead of what we define it as, you know, VOR times one, which that would mean I'm looking at an object. And for those listening out there that have ever done VOR exercises, you're moving your head side to side while focusing on an object. But the literature is showing that VOR times two, where my head goes in one direction and the object is in the opposite direction, in these small increments actually result in better outcomes. So, you know, I don't know how widely that's being implemented. I think VOR exercises are obviously super important in patients with movement-related dizziness. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a lot to learn, and I think we're going to be learning some other ways and even more effective ways that we can retrain the VOR.
Yeah. You know, Bridget, that's like we said on ours, the VNG was the gold standard, and it still is, quote unquote, the gold standard, but at least at ABHA, we've gone so far past the VNG. And I think sometimes we get locked in as professionals that, oh, this is what we should do. This is what everybody else is doing. And I think what I see from the audiology's side of this whole thing is that we get patients coming in and said, oh yeah, they gave me these exercises to do at home, and I look at a mark and I move my head and I'm not getting any better. And I think sometimes just on both sides, we get stuck in saying, okay, well, this is what we do and you should get better. Just give it time.
No, I think, you know, that's a beautiful analogy because as an audiologist, you know, your profession, particularly people specializing in the vestibular space, know the value of a VNG, and knowing the value of something is also, it's not just knowing the benefits, but it's knowing the limitations. Mm-hmm. And we know there's limitations in caloric testing. And in your clinic, and we're fortunate in our clinic that we have that advanced technology that gives us more information than just eye-head coordination, or VOR is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. in one plane. And, you know, just like you're alluding to, a caloric test may be normal, but patients may have VOR dysfunction, right, if you just use that test. So there are limitations. The caloric's not the best way to compare something to what happens when I move my head when someone calls my name, or I'm walking across the street and I need to check traffic. And so I do think defining vestibular rehab through VOR adaptation exercises only is potentially, I wouldn't go as far to say dangerous. I think it's limiting. We're going to limit the outcomes. And I'm sure you've seen this, but not only do patients come in and say, I've been doing this exercise, but they're not doing it correctly.
Yes.
And that may not be the therapist's, fault at all, because I know we spend a lot of time teaching. And then when we have them come back, they're doing it with their eyes closed. They're doing huge head movements. And I definitely see technique in VOR being an issue. And, I think y'all know that in this space that VOR as healthcare providers, when it comes to treatment, that we're taught that they should move the head at 2 hertz. And I find that interesting. And, we convert it to a beats per minute because it's a metronome, but the VOR is an angular head movement. It's an angular velocity. Mm-hmm. And so people don't calculate how fast that metronome should be, and they don't think about the amplitude or the size of the head movement. So, I think it's a great opportunity for us all to sit down and go, okay, an average head movement is 100 degrees per second. So if I want someone to decrease movement-related dizziness when they move their head, and I want to be working around 100 degrees per second, I can't just think beats per minute. I have to think how big is that head movement, because all of that plays a factor. And that really allows you to customize your exercises to the patient. And the best outcomes come through customization.
Yeah. Oh, totally agree. Yes, I totally agree with that. So recently, we have started to implement an OPK therapy based on your research and program design. Can you tell the listeners why you designed this therapy, and what are you finding amongst your own patients using this OPK therapy?
Sure. And I think, just optokinetic therapy, for those of you listening who may not know, is basically exposure to moving stripes across your visual field. It does not have to be stripes. It can be moving stars, but it is a type of therapy that is, or a type of exposure to something that is really gaining some momentum in the literature. And the other thing is, for listeners, I can't take credit for the research. I've simply been able to take advantage of the researchers out there, especially, I'm a big follower of Dr. Mucci or Dr. Pavlo's work in optokinetic stimulation, and particularly Dr. Mucci and colleagues in a recent paper they did about optokinetic stimulation and how that relates to these persistent feelings of self-motion, like I'm not moving, but I feel like I'm moving. And it's really interesting. I would try to explain the best I can to those listening is this type of therapy is basically you're exposing yourself, you're watching these moving stripes across your visual field, which is going to stimulate your visual system. And we can do some things like add these slow lateral head tilts, like ear, kind of think about ear to shoulder back and forth in these slow movements that wake up the inner ear through those lateral head tilts that send information about orientation. And so the brain is being exposed to visual, it's being exposed to vestibular, and that the way the brain works is that's sending some messages down through your body about how do I use my body for orientation. And again, the recent literature, which I think is exciting to have a better understanding about, is what we're seeing in patients with perceived symptoms of self-motion or those symptoms associated with 3PD is a lack of tapping into what we call our somatosensory, or some people say proprioceptive, our body cues. And so what we are finding is by adding a visual and vestibular in a supported seated place, like sitting, is allowing people to tap into their body for orientation. We're having good results. Now, some of this actually, particularly when we talk about the tilting your head side to side, like ear to shoulder, comes from Dr. Day and colleagues' work, and specifically related to a condition of MDDS. And you know, their research showed 74% improvement. And then there's been more researchers who've looked at that, maybe not finding as good as results in this type of therapy, but, 56 to 64 to 68, and some 72% improvement. So what I did is I just took a deep dive into the different research papers, came up with a guideline that was more applicable in the clinical setting versus going to somewhere all day for 5 days in a row. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, our results are far greater than we expected. So we decided collectively, our staff, to say, we don't care for the word protocol, because everything needs to be customized to the patient. But we thought the best way to gather this data is, let's start with the protocol. Let's all be the same and see what the results are. And we all started coming back to each other like, oh my gosh, I've been seeing this patient off and on for 2 years. I started this and they're improving. There may be a crazy success story. I have someone with MDDS has had symptoms for 7 years and they did this protocol and in 5 days it was gone. It won't always sound like that. But I think as we understand this kind of scientific model and theories behind this, the more we can start applying it to help our patients. So I could just thank the researchers out there that are doing the work to help me have those easier conversations with patients. And we're super excited about the outcomes we're getting.
That's great. And just really quick for our listeners, MDDS is what, Bridget?
So MDDS has traditionally is related to having these persistent symptoms of self-motion, especially like rocking, bobbing. Some people will feel like it's even a falling sensation after being particularly on a boat. It could be a plane, a train, or maybe multiple different types of transportation. Like, I flew here, I've gotten a car, and then I took a train. And so basically when that stops or you get off a boat, those symptoms of kind of almost like a seasickness stay with you, and you don't like to be still. You feel better when you're moving. And now there's more reference to what we call SOMDDS, or spontaneous onset, where it may not be related to travel. Maybe it's related to a traumatic event, emotional trauma, physical trauma, hormonal changes, and even some have mentioned exposure to of these symptoms after exposure to steroids. So I think we're just on the tip of the iceberg of understanding this. So there's MDDS related to, I'd rather be moving. I don't want to be still after travel. And then for having the onset of these symptoms, not after travel. And we have seen more of that since COVID.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So acronym stands for Maldet-Debarkmann syndrome, for those
yes.
out there listening. Why do you think that is, that you've seen more because of COVID?
I think it's anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And, whether it's the diagnosis of MDDS-like symptoms, you've had a podcast on 3PD. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, remind your listeners about that, definitely have seen those type of symptoms since COVID, and certainly think it's related to anxiety.
Yeah. I actually had a young lady who came to my office and was anxious to begin with, but her anxiety grew the more she was at home, the more she was on the internet, mm-hmm. the more she read. And basically, she had decided that she had Maldet-Debarkmann syndrome and that this was going to be her life forever. And she's only, 30. And my first thing was, get off the internet. Yeah. And then there's that reassurance that it isn't that bad. And guess what? We have things now. And she actually is doing quite well. She's improving a lot. She's very happy. She's back to work. She's back to grocery shopping and that type of thing. But I think that you're right. I think that anxiety component for all of us right now is high because people haven't been able to get out. And so now that they are going out, they've had a lot of time to sit and focus on their symptoms, mm-hmm. whether it be dizziness, whether it be tinnitus, whether it be, gut pain or whatever. and now they're out going, okay, it's still happening. What's going on here? So that anxiety component is huge.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's just incredibly important for all of us, as whether we're a patient or we're providing care for a patient, is not to forget that when we use the word anxiety, we're not, a lot of times people hear that, no, I'm not anxious. Is that anxiety is real. And when I say real, it results in a physiological response. So, your alarm system is just on, it's on, and it will not turn down. And we're not wired to have stress and be our sympathetic nervous system just be on. And so we start to get super sensitive to stimulation, and it's just a process. But it is a true physiological response, and the gut and the brain are very connected. And we definitely have all had a little bit more anxiety with COVID.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Going back, Bridget, to the optokinetic therapy uh-huh. that you're doing. So it's interesting to get to get that physical therapy perspective on that, because you're using an optokinetic stimulus, which is those stripes, and then you're tilting the head. So as an audiologist, from an audiologist perspective, that's part of the VNG battery, only we just do optokinetics, just visual stimulation to see how somebody does in that situation, but we've never thought to tilt the head mm-hmm. to see, what would happen. We tilt, the head and do different positions independently of the optokinetics, but that's just something interesting that I was just thinking about as you were talking about that. But I know in your practice, as far as audiologists, you work with them. We're wondering, have you always felt that it's important to include audiology as part of your care team?
Well, I can't say always, because it's, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I had the opportunity to work with audiologists did I appreciate the value of the testing, mm-hmm. the value of doing the testing correctly, the value of not relying on a summary sheet to tell you the findings, but knowing how to read the raw data, and the value of how that can be combined with the clinical exam to look for patterns. And so I wish that I could tell you always, but you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And now it's unimaginable to me. And it's not to say that vestibular diagnostics define the level of impairment. I mean, y'all know that you can mm-hmm. have a patient that has 100% weakness on one side, and has returned to a pretty normal life. And you may have someone who has normal V&G that feels like they're pretty disabled. Mm-hmm. But to look, to utilize the diagnostics, the value of it, and meaning, you know, you understand the limitations and the benefits of each test, is just, it's just priceless. I'm so lucky to have learned so much in that area. So I feel blessed.
That's great. We feel blessed having you too. So, yes, somebody to talk to and work these things through. But it's been very, professionally, it's been great to have someone like yourself, Bridget, that we can talk to and say, okay, this is what we're finding, and this is, should we do anything different? Just like Susan just mentioned, I never thought about tilting the head. So she and I are probably going to have a conversation.
That's right.
What is the value of doing this in the test protocol? But also, it just to be able to talk things through, because like you said, everything has to be customized. And you and I, Bridget, both have had those patients that come in and they've been told they were normal. Mm-hmm. They're normal. You know, I've even had patients that tell me the next step is a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. you know, because they think I'm crazy or it's all in my head. And of course I always say, well, yeah, it is in your head, but we have a reason for it.
It never gets old to say that.
Right. So it's really nice to be able to pinpoint what your patients are telling you, because nobody wants to be dizzy, I don't think, you know, mm-mm. and they don't want to go to five or six or 10 different professionals. I don't think that's their goal in life, right? You know, so it's really good to have that collaboration and I think be able to advance the profession on both sides to benefit our patients.
Oh, I mean, just 110% for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're in this for, right? Is okay. Learning as much as possible from multiple disciplines so that we can better serve our patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Bridget, given our history, I know you are passionate about the diagnosis and care of the concussed patient, as I am as well. What areas of have you seen an improvement with these patients? So you get this patient, they've experienced some type of concussion, whether it's a sports injury, a fall, whatever the case may be, a motor vehicle accident. And for a long time, they were just kind of said, oh, you look fine, you are fine, you can walk and talk and, okay, go back to work. And we've known for years that's not the case. There's still some struggles that they're having. So what have you, in all of your work that you've done, which is incredible, found to be the most rewarding and the most improvement in this area of concussion?
Well, I think the thing, we no longer grade a concussion, right?
Yes.
So I think as a provider, for me personally, just being able to embrace that this is the most current knowledge that I have, but I may be saying something different in 5 years. So, mm-hmm. you know, I was very confident in talking about treatment when we were grading a concussion. So, you know, I think that is very difficult for patients, for the community, for the public, when we have a moving target in concussion definition. And it continues to evolve somewhat. Like we went from grading a concussion to not grading, and that's taken some time, but now we know that we can't grade a concussion. We cannot predict someone's recovery based on the severity of the head, the direct hit, or whether they had a loss of consciousness. So, you know, I think that was a big learning curve. The awareness. So, you know, where there's pluses, there's minuses. Where there's minuses, there's pluses. Is the media has brought forth this unsurpassable attention on concussion, but there's been some negative effects of that. So I think remains a big challenge of how our discussion around concussion makes sense and how we can stay abreast of it as something that's just continues to evolve. I think what I'm most excited about is a growing awareness around that we don't just look at cognitive testing. There's these subtypes of concussion where it does this more of a migraine component? Is this more of a visual component? Is it more of a vestibular? Is it a combination? Is it more of an anxiety or a mood component? Is it a sleep component? Is it related to the neck? And so as we increase our awareness around that and our understanding around that, I think the care around that will just continue to improve. But if I look back at someone with a concussion that I was seeing 25 years ago, I was doing an intake, but maybe instead of doing the post-concussion symptom scale, now I'm using the clinical profile screen, was still doing balance testing. But now we do balance testing by adding a higher level of vestibular on some patients or a motion sensitivity test. We look at the neck. We have to look at the visual system. You cannot separate the eyes, the neck, the ears, and just how that all affects how we can process. You, Dana, have been taking a deeper look into specialized hearing testing, like auditory processing, mm-hmm. but in cognitive testing and just, you know, there's so much to learn in that area. So, you know, I'm not sure I completely answered the question there. Mm-hmm. I think the awareness, right? When we have awareness, there's always the opportunity for better care. And sometimes that awareness is learning that what we were saying wasn't accurate, right?
Right.
So awareness mm-hmm. isn't always people like, this is the answer. I mean, we still really don't have a diagnostic criteria or we don't have a diagnostic test for concussion, right? So, mm-hmm. and I think particularly the way, I'm in Western medicine, but there's been such a reliance on imaging that if you can't see it, it's not there. And unfortunately, dizziness is so many things, pain, dizziness, foggy headedness. Those are silent syndromes. People look okay on the outside, but don't feel okay on the inside. And that's really where we have to start, is that awareness. If someone walks in with a knee brace, you're like, oh, you hurt your knee. Mm-hmm. Someone may not be thinking clearly, may feel dizzy, and they look fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to start with that understanding just with patients and helping them relay that to their family and to their friends and to their coworkers and to their bosses. And I think there's so much we can do to help those persistent symptoms. Even we call it post-concussion syndrome, and people think, okay, does that mean I'm going to have it forever? What you have is these persisting symptoms after having a concussion, and there's a lot we can do to help you with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. So, and when we talked in a previous episode about 3PD, and we brought that up today mm-hmm. too, that's the persistent postural perceptual dizziness that seems to occur when somebody has an event such as a concussion that you were just describing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have an event causes some disruption in the body and the brain, and then this continues for over 3 months, and it just, continues to continue. So So you're seeing these patients in your clinic, and are you having some success with therapy with them?
You know, yes, we do have success. I can't really categorize some success. It's definitely more challenging. And when I say more challenging, I'm not saying these patients are more challenging to us. Mm-hmm. It's just more challenging to what can we do to help you? Because there's so many variables. So, you know, taking the time to talk about this diagnosis. So, you know, having a diagnosis can sometimes really help people in their recovery because they finally found something. This is what I have. Mm-hmm. And we're like, yes, this, you fit this criteria, but this does not define you. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a point where you have to leave your diagnosis at the door and not let the diagnosis define you. Yes, you've had a concussion. Okay, you have symptoms that suggest 3PD or MDDS. We want to talk about your recovery. What can we do to help you in your recovery? And really what I've learned is the clearer you can be is this is what the literature shows. This is what functional, not traditional imaging has shown about what's happening in your brain, this mismatch. And yes, that test may have been normal. And I do recommend to providers with patients with chronic symptoms, when you get the chance to sit down in a room with them, don't say, well, I see that your V&G is normal, because that's not what they want to hear.
Right.
We want to hear, like, we see that there's something going on here.
Right.
Even the optokinetic testing in a V&G may have been normal, but it caused symptoms. Mm-hmm. That's a finding. And so I think sitting down with patients and saying, yes, I hear you. I'm going to do some testing of your balance, and then we're going to talk about things, and then going, okay, here's what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do for the next 3 weeks. I'm going to start you with this exercise. You're going to watch these videos. I'm going to start it with this. Then you're going to tell me how you tolerated it. And symptoms are so important. A comprehensive intake is so important to understand, you know, to create a working diagnosis, what is going on. But once you get to have that story, that intake, now it's time to focus on your recovery. So you may do something that causes dizziness. That's okay. It's okay. What I want to know is how long did it take you to recover from that? Mm-hmm. If it took a few seconds, if it took a couple of minutes, I'm okay with that. If it took 20 minutes, then we need to step back. And you empower the patient, and can, you know, this depends on us working together. I'm going to give you the tools, but if I don't know how quickly you recover, then I can't best guide you. So please stay, you know, let's do this together. You will help me guide your therapy, and I'll be teaching you how to guide your therapy for a lifetime if needed, you know, or if this mm-hmm. comes and goes. So I think we definitely, the key is empowering patients in their own recovery.
Totally agree with that. Yes. Wonderful. So anything we didn't ask you that you think our listeners would be interested in knowing about what you do and how balance therapy could help them?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, targeted vestibular rehab can be very helpful. It doesn't work for everyone. You know, so if this is a listener who's gone to therapy over and over and over, and you've been doing the head shaking, or you've been doing someone told you to lie on your right side and lie on your left side and sit up and right side and left side, you know, there are other treatment options. So what I advise is if you feel like your therapist has, you know, you've tried and this didn't work, and you feel confident that you've tried you know, what's going on with your neck? What's going on with your visual system? What's going on with your inner ear? What's going on with your posture? What's going on with your gut to brain? What's going on with your allergies? Do you have migraines? How are your hormones? You know, if you're having those conversations with your therapist, then it just may be that trying something what we would call alternative, which really means maybe not as supported in Western medicine, is acupuncture, craniosacral, getting with someone who can help you with diet to help any kind of gut to brain GI issues. If sleep, you know, if you're not sleeping, it's really going to be hard to have a full recovery because sleep is so important. Mm-hmm. So I think my advice, if on the patient side, if you feel that someone is listening to all of you, all of your stories related to your symptoms, because you as a patient know you better than anyone, then maybe it's just something different. And asking your therapist, like, do you know anyone else? Is there any alternative? What about acupuncture? What about cranial sacral? There may be other options. Meditation is fantastic. So, and I think working for balance, you know, if you're a patient listening and you're doing an exercise at home that you're really good at, you can start with that because it feels good to be successful. Mm-hmm. But if you can do something pretty successfully, then you probably don't need it. Not a lot of learning is going to come from something you can already do successful. If you're trying something that increases your symptoms, or I can't do that, I can't stand on one leg, I can't stand on a phone with my feet together, eyes closed, I can't, not more than 2 seconds, it's too hard. So thinking about doing an activity that challenges your balance doesn't make you bring your ears up into your shoulders and get all tight and tense, because we don't want that. Being able to breathe while you do an exercise. So talking with your therapist, I found this, you know, I actually found this too easy, or I'm really finding this too hard, because both of those exercises can be too easy and they can be too hard. And that fluctuates. So what you can do one day, you may not be able to do the next day, or what you can do in the morning, you may not be able to do in the afternoon. And just knowing that this is a moving, very fluid process, but the targeted therapy for you, you can really have amazing outcomes.
And on that, we thank you so much for your time today.
Sure.
Okay, great. And so we're just going to move on to our next segment, and that's tips and tricks. And I think you kind of just gave it right there. So for those of you that didn't quite catch it, the tips and tricks is, if it's too easy, it's too hard, let your therapist know. If things aren't going well, I think is what you're saying, is ask if there's anything else that can be done.
Yes. Yeah. It's very important that as a patient that you feel heard, and don't be afraid to say to your therapist, I just want you to listen. I want to feel heard. Mm-hmm. And this is a team effort. You don't go to therapy for someone just to say, do this, and it not be collaborative. It's a collaborative, empowering effort for both of you.
Okay. So in our next segment, it's what would you rather? So Bridget, would you rather run with the bulls or take 4 and 5 year olds on a field trip?
Wow.
Well, you know, that's a great question. When I think about running with the bulls, I feel like that I would be on vacation. And so it would make me think, oh, I want to be on vacation. I do love kids though. Mm-hmm. So that could potentially be a lot of fun. Can I do both?
Sure.
Together.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Together. Let's put them together.
Yeah. How about we go on vacation, run with the bulls, come back grounded and safe, and then go on a field trip with 4 and 5 year olds.
There you go.
Yes. Or protect the 4 and 5 year olds from the bulls. That would be would be something.
Now that's even bigger. That's correct. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Dr. Bridget Wallace for joining us today. I would like to also thank my partner in crime, Dr. Susan Schmidt, and I would also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us again today for this episode. If you have any questions for any of us at ABHA, please post them on our Facebook page or email us at questions@ArizonaBalance, Arizona spelled out. So that's questions@ArizonaBalance.com. Also, don't forget to subscribe, as we are always talking about different topics and you don't want to miss any of our future episodes.
That's for sure. And also, for a free copy of Dr. Day's book, Re-Engage with Life and Family, you can visit our website at azbalanceandhearing.com. So AZ is abbreviated this time. azbalanceandhearing.com, and click the box requesting a free copy. Or you can call our office at 602-265-9000 to request a free copy that way. Just let one of our awesome staff know that you heard it on our podcast today.
Remember, hearing care is health care, and treating your hearing loss is the number one modifiable risk factor for reducing your risk of developing dementia. Treating your hearing loss has also been shown to reduce the risk of falls, decrease the experience of tinnitus, increase your social engagement, and decrease depression. Don't put it off any longer. I'd like to thank Robin, our producer, who is always so patient with us here in the studio, especially today when I had a coughing fit. So thank you, Robin. Also, Dave Pratt, Star Worldwide Networks, for allowing us to use this space. But mostly, again, I thank you, our listeners, for joining us. ABHA, partnering with you to
better balance,
better hearing,
better life.
Thank you for listening to the ABHA Listen and Learn podcast with Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt. Join us next time as we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. Plus, hear any of our past episodes on demand 24/7 on StarWorldwideNetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.